Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 13th of October, Anno Domini 2012, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues, here it comes! It's a question that many retail experts are asking these days, particularly in light of growing evidence that those supposedly queue-worthy deals aren't always the best bargains. Why do we wait in line? Particularly in terms of that most recent American waiting in line ritual, shopping for Apple's latest gadget. Putting aside the fact that the iPhone 5 has received its share of negative notices, there's also the hard-to-ignore reality that the phone is available for the same price through pre-order online, or, more to the point, that even those eager to buy the latest version of the Apple smartphone could probably wait a few weeks without suffering any real consequences. But that would ignore the real point, says those who study consumer trends. The shared experience of waiting is part of what drives consumer satisfaction. As bewildering as that may seem to anyone who's wasted the better part of a day standing online at the Department of Motor Vehicles. In this new approach to shopping, call it queue chic, time wasted is camaraderie gained. Shopping has become a collective event, said Adam Hanft of Hanft Projects, a New York consulting firm that works with consumer brands. Hanft and other retail experts say that by standing in a crowd, shoppers see themselves as making the right buying decision, a concept known as social proof. And that holds true even in the face of the considerable logic to the contrary. A brand name television, for example, is actually more expensive on Black Friday than on several other holiday season shopping days and can be found at more than a 50% discount from Black Friday prices in midsummer. It's not just consumers who are taking pleasure in standing in line. Retailers also recognize the value of keeping shoppers waiting. Say experts, that's because waiting crowds create attention, and that attention can translate into sales even after the initial frenzy has died down. After all, not every buyer of Harry Potter novels stood in line at those midnight release events at bookstores. Loddick argues that if shoppers believe that everything is really available to is readily available to them, they'll get excited only when there's a sense of scarcity, real or imagined. I call it the paradox of choice. In the case of the iPhone 5, the scarcity is apparently real. Apple is looking at a multi-week backlog for its new smartphone, but if waiting equals buzz, there's now something of an Apple buzz backlash. Consider the television ads that Apple mobile rival Samsung has been running for its Galaxy line of smartphones. It's a campaign built around spoofing the Apple fanboys doing what comes naturally to them, waiting in line. So our question to you at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would have us remind you, is did you wait in line for an iPhone? Why? And your choices are, I had to be first. Well, all my friends did it. It's my only human contact. Don't judge me. And I, what now? And so far we have 33 votes. And obviously for our listeners, the number one choice is I what now, followed by it's my only human contact, don't judge me. But when you're done with that, I know you'll have more to say. So check the yellow box underneath the poll. Click on give us your opinion. It will take you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
And you can enter your opinion.
It was there, just... Very, very low.
Very, very faint.
There it is.
All right, there you go. And then come back. You know,
got to kickstart it.
Yeah, I've said this before. I'm going to say it again. And anybody who does it owes me 10%. Apple is really missing the boat here. People stand in line for the Apple gadget for days. They camp out. Apple is leaving money on the table by not having Apple branded tents. Apple-branded chairs.
They do have the Apple employees come out with water in hot cities and hot days.
Yes, I understand that, but there should be Apple-branded chairs. Yeah. Because no real Apple fanboy And I'm not saying people who there are a lot of people who use apples for very legitimate reasons, but there are those who have bought into the hipster chic mystique of having an apple. And many of those are the people who wait in line, and not one of them would be caught dead in that line if there were an apple chair and they were not sitting in it. And I think they would sell a billion of them.
Or umbrellas and water bottles.
Yeah. Umbrellas, water bottles, tents, hoodies. Well, you can get clothing.
Yeah, but like the water bottle while they're waiting in line, or an umbrella. If it's raining out, have some there. Go around. Hey, $10. Have an umbrella.
That's exactly right.
But for the interviews we've seen of the people, it is mostly for the camaraderie. You end up meeting the same people in line, and it's free publicity for Apple because all these stupid lines get on the news.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And that's the point of this. It's a large part the camaraderie and the fact that everybody validates each other.
Yep.
You know? All my friends are doing it. Yeah, right, exactly. Well, if your friends all jumped off a bridge, would you? And there was an age when you would have said, well, yeah, Ma, absolutely.
Yep.
It's what we all do.
It's called base jumping.
Or bungee jumping. Yep. One of the two. But yeah, I don't know what to. I hate standing in line. I stood in line one Black Friday for a loss leader. We were taking a trip to Arizona. We were taking a plane to Arizona. This is many, 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 many years ago, and they were selling a DVD player combination screen thing for 60-70% off, and it was a loss leader. So I went to stand in line at 4 o'clock in the morning on Black Friday. I was still the 20th person in line.
No way.
And by the time the doors opened, there had to be 700 people in line. Easily 700 people in line. And that was for my daughter. And that's the only reason I stood in that line. I don't even go out on Black Friday. To me, Black Friday is a day to never go near a store. I buy a lot of things online now, which means I never wait in line because I'm always online. But we'd like to hear from you, so give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Shopping season is about to begin, probably has already begun because it's not yet Halloween. So give us a call and let us know what your shopping plans are for this holiday season. In the meantime, we are going to go to the phone, and our first caller is James from Rochester, New York. Welcome, James. What's your question?
Thank you. Every couple of days, my laptop screen goes completely black for about 15 seconds, and the message on the bottom is, display driver stopped responding, and it's got NVIDIA in there, something about that. And then it's fine. What is that, and how do I prevent it?
Do you have power management on?
What's that?
In other words, if you go into the control panel and under power settings, that it turns off the monitor. Windows, I don't know why they put that feature in there, does not really act well, especially on laptops, of dimming the screen or spinning down the hard drive. I turn all of that stuff off.
So what should I do?
Go in and under power management.
Yeah.
In the control panel,
yeah. Take those settings and make sure they all say never.
Never?
Yes. Some folks will set them for 10 minutes and all this other stuff.
Yeah,
on a laptop.
I know what those are. I've got them. All right, put them all on never.
Yes.
And see if that solves the problem.
Yep.
We see a lot of laptops coming with a 10-minute sleep on it as sort of a concession to Greenpeace and the environmentalists that by putting it to sleep that fast, you're saving a lot of power. But most people are still working when it goes to sleep, and they'll change it anyway.
Yep.
Okay,
I certainly,
one other quick
hold
question.
On. I certainly, on well, wait, wait, hold on.
I have,
okay,
Windows
you talk.
Live.
Is he not
it says
that?
Delete and block on these messages or show images.
Sorry, I didn't hear any of that. Could you repeat it, please?
Yes, on the emails, some of them it says for the images, show images or delete and block. What's the difference? I mean, what should
if you
have?
Show the images, you will see them as they come in the email.
Is that dangerous?
It can be. That's why the other choice exists.
Oh.
You see, there are a lot of viruses that can be attached to messages, and you will get that virus to images, and you will get that virus just by viewing the image. That's why we tell people turn off the preview pane and don't view images.
Okay. I didn't know what that was for.
Yep.
Thank you.
Sure.
Bye.
Yep. A lot of times those messages will come from legitimate bulk mailers.
Right.
You know, you get the L.L. Bean catalog, and it blocks all the images because the bad guys will send bad images.
But most of them will say, show images for this message.
Right.
And if it's come from somebody you know, like ThinkGeek,
yep.
I hit show images so I can see the latest
and then
Who
and then your mail
stuff.
Program usually remembers that and will yeah. show that. And if you, and for anyone in your address book, it typically always shows the images too.
Right. So you can set all that depending on your program. Yeah. But most of them don't show images unless you specifically tell them to, and that's a good thing. All right. Our next caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question? Dave?
A recent discovery of Pandora. I'm quite pleased with it. And the computer that I switched over to try and play it on, it actually it will play the station, but the graphics for the controls, you know, the progress bar and the thumbs up and the thumbs down,
yeah,
they don't actually display. If I run the mouse over there, I can see it select whatever, you know, I'm over it, but I don't know what it is because there's no graphic under it.
What browser are you using to show?
Well, I started out in Firefox, but this problem exists with both Firefox and Internet Explorer.
It's probably because I believe those are in Java, aren't they? Java.
I think so. Yeah.
Thing. It's a Java applet,
or maybe JavaScript,
or perhaps JavaScript. But if you've got that turned off, you're using NoScript or one of those things, or you're just not using Java at all.
Okay.
You may not see those things. I don't know if Firefox does. I thought Eudora. Excuse me. I thought Chrome did. Had a an actual applet. If you were running Chrome, you could go into the Chrome Web Store and download a little applet for Pandora. But that just might take you to the page itself anyway, so I don't think it matters.
But if you check the preferences or options in the browser, there's usually something under security or privacy turning on and off Java and JavaScript.
With that tip, I'm sure I can figure it out. It'll take me some digging. But the only other thing is the other question, since you mentioned Chrome. I tried Chrome, and it's so radically different. I mean, I can't find any menu items or anything.
Right.
And so I just either learn to love it or just forget it.
They're there. You just have to know where they are. And if you look over at the far right of the, the bar with the address bar where you type in your URLs?
I have already uninstalled it, but...
All right. Well, over at the far right, you will either see a wrench or three... parallel lines, depending on which version you're using. That's the menu for all the controls.
Right.
They're all under there. The reason that they do that is because that leaves you more real estate on the screen for your web browser.
Okay.
By putting them in there as opposed to yet another line above the bookmark bar, for example.
Yeah, I already got huge monitors, and I'm old and stodgy.
Yeah.
It's kind of like
when that'll cover it for now. Thank you.
All right.
It's kind of like when you accidentally go into full screen mode on IE or Firefox or one of those, and you can't find your menus anymore because it's hiding them.
Well, you can do that with programs, too. Suddenly it fills the screen. You don't know what to do. There was a lady on Google Plus who was having that problem. There were about 50 things that she could do to fix it, and I said, why don't you just double-click on the blue bar across the top? She wrote back. She said, oh, my God, that fixed it. That fixed it. Yeah, okay. This is, of course, one of the continuing problems with computers in general is the fact that the graphical user interfaces become so familiar to us that if anything changes, we're confused.
Yep.
And I get that. And, of course, that's eventually we'll talk about Windows 8 once it's available. I've had a half a dozen people complain to me that they – can't download Windows. We have a thing called MSDNA, the Microsoft Developers Network Academic Alliance, and there's a version of the Windows 8 preview there, but they're angry that they can't download real Windows 8 yet, and I keep telling them that's because it's not actually out yet. When it's actually out, then it'll be in the store for you to download, but until then, it's not going to be there. I don't control that. Microsoft controls that themselves.
And they're one of those companies that likes announcing things a year before they're available.
Well, Well, that's right, and we keep and we're the
and
ones.
And Apple's
who get
the one that won't announce anything until the second it's available,
or until the second after it's available. Yeah. Hey, for those of you who were paying attention, realize they could have gone into their store this morning and bought this,
yeah,
which we're now going to announce.
Well, that's the rumored next week's announcement of the 7-inch iPad Mini.
Well, this is like the fourth time that the
yep.
that
well the rumor sites keep changing their mind, and, yeah. and partly I'm thinking Tim Cook is back there going.
Well, they're watering.
Mac rumor says the 12th. I'm going to change it now.
Right.
Well, they're watering it down and lowering the price. Correct.
Well, it's a 7-inch version of the iPad yeah. at 1024x768.
Or it's a 7-inch version of
the
iPod
Touch.
Touch.
Yeah.
I mean, it really, Microsoft, Apple is touting this is exactly the same product, only bigger or smaller.
But because of all the buzz over the rumors, we're seeing mainstream sites like CNN reporting on rumors of a new Apple product. Apple doesn't have to pay for marketing.
Exactly right. And the lines will form again.
Yep. What we expect...
Let's all go stand in front of the line with our Samsung phones.
Yeah. We expect a press announcement to come out inviting the press to the announcement. And that's usually a week before the announcement actually happens.
Right.
Did you get the Galaxy 3, was it?
No, I have the original Galaxy Nexus, the one that that Apple sued Samsung over, and now the judge has said, shut up, Apple, go ahead and sell Samsung.
After the other judge said Samsung wasn't cool enough to copy Apple?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Because I see they got a new one out, the Galaxy Note.
The Galaxy Note is amazing, and I want
one. The phone.
That's actually older, I think.
Yeah.
By a month or two.
Well, it's got the newer Android ice cream on it.
Right, right, right. I just got upgraded to the latest 4.1.2 version of on my phone, and I'm on the Nexus 7 tablet. That also upgraded. Mm-hmm. And we had I want the Note. Any of our vendors out there listening, please feel free to send me a note. I would be happy to talk about it on the air. Also, Rock Wiki. We should probably talk a little bit about Rock Wiki. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Linda from Greece is patiently hanging on the line, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. We are the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Linda from Greece on the line. Hi, Linda. What's up?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Okay. To answer your question, the only way I would stand in line if somebody offered me $1 million and said, stand in line for 8 hours. That's the only reason I would do it.
Yep. Yep. $1 million.
Okay. My question to you is... I talked to Sam and Dave's store, and I went out and hurriedly buy a Windows 7 desktop because I was told by Best Buy that if I didn't buy it, come November 1st, I'd have to get Windows 8. So I got a Gateway 1 terabyte, 6 megabyte. Six gigabytes, whatever you call it.
Yeah, 6 gigs
of
memory.
I got that computer. Now, my question is, I had a Windows XP, and I bought Apple TV, and for some reason, it didn't recognize it. Now, if I buy Apple TV and put it on my new computer, it should sync up perfectly, right?
Well, Windows 7 with iTunes, what is it, 10.6, 10.7, whatever, with the latest iTunes, should recognize the Apple TV.
I haven't gotten it. I get the computer on Thursday. Geek Squad's delivering it to me and setting it up for me. But I had a heck of a time with Windows XP. I could never get it to sync up or anything. And I'm just wondering, you know, with the new Windows 7 and all that and the latest iTunes and everything, I shouldn't have any problems.
No, Windows 7 should find it very easily. I mean, I've had very few clients have issues. I mean, Windows 7 is that much smarter than XP in detecting things and compatibility.
Right. We have to remember how old XP is and how many products came out after it.
And there was
and
Vista in between there.
For it, right.
So
yeah, okay, Dave. I talked to Sam in your store, and she said to me, if I bring my old computer, you will destroy it for me. Is there a charge for it?
We just charge $5 to dispose of it because you know.
That you have to pay to have it hauled away.
Yeah, and it's all the hazardous materials inside the computer.
We only charge $5, and we're charging just what we do. But we this way, we've got a person that comes and gets it, and we'll properly dispose of it.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, because...
only because of the price of gas. You know, he's...
And I'm going to have him put it in my car. You know, I don't trust myself to destroy it. I would rather pay the unit to destroy it.
Well, see, the other thing that we do, and this is why we charge the $5, we pull the hard drive out. And I get to have fun. I take the hard drive out.
I've got two hard drives in there. Go to town, sir. Go to town.
Well, that's the thing. I get to have fun out there. I have a nice 20-pound sludge hammer. And I've got a couple bricks out in the backyard there, off to the side of the bench. And I can just turn them in. What were hard drives soon become maracas.
Okay, one more quick question I've got. Okay, I'm stumbling over my words here. I got the complete package where they're going to install everything. Mm-hmm. Okay, now everything is backed up to my click-free external hard drives. Okay, should I pay to have them do the data transfer, or should I just take it off my click-free? I'm not sure everything's going to go back on. Which would be the safest thing, to have them do it or just do it from my click-free?
Well, the safest thing would be to have them do it.
Yeah. That way, if something goes wrong, you can blame them.
Okay. Yeah. So, because as I said, I went to Best Buy, and they said, I said, I'm looking for a Windows 7 computer. How long do I have? And he says, you got 2 weeks. And I went, I've got 2 weeks? So I went home and talked to the money person, my mother, and I got a real sweet machine. As I said, it's got 1 terabyte.
Yeah, you were saying all that.
And it's got 60 gigabytes.
Well, we have to. Yeah, you already covered all that. But we got to warn folks, though, is what we've been saying. Is yes, and don't let that scare you though. Other suppliers like myself and other computer shops around town, we still will be able to get Windows 7 for a little while on into November. Him just trying to scare you that, you know, he's trying to do the sale. I'm pretty sure Steve is the same way. We'll be able to get it for a while. It doesn't totally just dry up. It's just whether, see, when Best Buy and all these folks get it in, they get packages. Whereas the other shops here in town do custom builds. We will, if we can still get the software, build you a system to your needs. We're not going to build you a Cadillac when you only need a mid-size car.
Yeah, well, as I said, you know, I got a Gateway laptop, Windows 7, and I love it.
Good.
So I was going to get one, and I like Gateway because, you know, it's U.S. and all that. I don't have to call some Indian country, and I don't understand what they're saying. So, so I'm giving it on Thursday. So
have fun with it. And
my car, and I will have you destroy it.
Okay, sounds good.
Linda.
Have a good one.
And that's just because computers are full of technically hazardous materials. You've got the cadmium and lead and all the wiring in it. So it's not something you can legally put in the garbage. Although you set it in front of your house, it'll probably disappear within an hour. But the big thing for most people is...
Except they don't anymore. They pull it open and pull out some components and leave the rest there.
Yep. The big
thing, you get questions asked, is it working?
Yeah, that's why I threw it out there. Yeah, the big issue for most people is the hard drive because it still has all your data on it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know enough how, take the hard drive out yourself, or use a reputable recycler that does it for you.
Right.
All right. Our next caller is Jim from Greece, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi there.
I do not have the internet where I live, so I regularly go to the library and sometimes the local establishments, and I'll sit and do my online work there. My question is, when I'm at a site, whether it's Amazon.com or somewhere else, and I'm using the SSL socket that's available between the sites, is what I'm doing encrypted and safe, or should there be something else I should use?
two things. First, as long as you look up in the address bar and it says HTTPS for secure, then you're secure. You'll usually see that the address bar has turned green and or there's a lock icon somewhere on the screen. That tells you that the connection between you and the place that you're going to is encrypted and secure. Now, how encrypted and how secure is based entirely on the other site. Higher levels of encryption are better, et cetera, et cetera. The second question, though, is are you using your own laptop or are you using a machine at that place?
My own.
Then you're okay, because many of these things, no matter how encrypted they are, often have some temp files or a cache in which they are saving some bits of information. And as long as it's your laptop and you're taking it away with you, you're secure.
So, for example, if you use a public computer at like a library or bookstore, someone sits down after you, hits the back button in the browser, mm-hmm. and they're right back into your bank or your Amazon account.
If you haven't logged off.
Yeah. In fact, there was a big issue I heard on the Security Now website that Internet Explorer treats, I think Firefox now too, treats session cookies not as a session anymore. That because Firefox used to crash so much, they wouldn't recreate the session cookie. They'd use your old cookie.
That is absolutely stupid.
So that you could...
That is the dumbest thing I have ever heard.
Closing the window doesn't clear the cookie. In fact, quitting the browser doesn't necessarily clear the cookie either. So
okay, no more using Firefox. And what was the other one?
IE.
Oh, there's a surprise.
Yeah.
We already don't use that one. So now we don't use Firefox anymore.
I think they fixed it in later versions, but it was very, very annoying in some of the early versions because, and Steve Gibson was explaining it on Security Now, they explained it because it crashed so much when you restored your session, mm-hmm. it restored your session cookies for you. And as a convenience to the user to not make them log in. So now he says he's rewriting his website so that it forces a new cookie on every connection.
Good. Sorry, Jim. Go ahead.
No, you answered my question exactly.
Excellent.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, the other thing is how long they take to fix problems. We've got a story in here, actually, that I'll read now. Tuesday night, Google held its Ponium 2 competition at Hack in the Box 2012, offering up a total of $2 million for security holes found in Chrome. Only one was discovered. Hard to get more secure than that. A young hacker who goes by the alias Pinkie Pie netted the highest reward level, a $60,000 cash prize and a free Chromebook. Google patched the flaw and announced a new version of Chrome for Windows, Mac, and Linux on Wednesday. Tuesday was the was the discovery. Wednesday, it was fixed. You can certainly grab the latest release by using the browser's built-in silent updater to download it directly from google.com/Chrome. In its disclosure, Google confirmed the security flaw and reaffirmed the need for its Ponium competition. The official Chrome version change log is very short, as it only lists the patch for that one hole. And there's a bunch of blah 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 about how it's a WebKit scalable vectors graphic compromise exploits the renderer process. Blah 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 blah. Anyway, the release means Google patched the flaw in less than a day. Actually, fewer than 10 hours, to be more specific. The search giant did the same thing in the first Ponium contest earlier this year. Back in March, Pinkie Pie and Sergey Glazunov each earned $60,000 for exploits that bypassed Chromium security box, and Google fixed them both very quickly. Google launched the Ponium competition as an alternative to the Pwn2Own contest, from which it withdrew its sponsorship this year. Google was upset because the 2012 rules for the Ponium, for Pwn2Own, did not require full disclosure of exploits from the winners. Specifically exploits to break out of a sandboxed environment. Pwn2Own defended its decision, saying it believes no hackers would attempt to exploit Chrome if their methods had to be disclosed. But Google disagreed and offered up $60,000 for Chrome-specific exploits. Google also promised that non-Chrome vulnerabilities used would be immediately reported to the appropriate vendor. So far, however, hackers attending both Poniums only bothered to show off Chrome-specific flaws. So, do you feel safer using Chrome? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. You know, that's one of the reasons that I like using Chrome. It's just clearly more secure.
Mm-hmm.
When Google holds their own competitions.
Yeah, really.
And this wasn't just for Chrome. This was also for the Chromium operating system that runs Chromebooks and like that. So this was the only one that was found, and they fixed it 10 hours later. There was a fix available 10 hours later. This is a far cry from Microsoft, who often has a month or two or
I was just saying, when they feel about getting around it, you hear quite often, oh, yeah, we knew that hole was there
two years ago.
Yeah. And we just got around to fixing it. Oh, gee, thanks. I really, you know, the confidence level is just so great up there with Microsoft. And that's like what I'm also saying with Windows 8. I'm sorry. What they want you to do and go into their store for their apps and everything else, I don't have a lot of confidence in Microsoft. I love their products. But, you know, I don't like to put my eggs all in one basket either.
Well, and I don't even do that. I mean, God bless Bill Gates. If it wasn't for him, I would be an out-of-work actor.
Right.
I have always said that, but I don't use Windows, and I don't use any Microsoft
products. You might
products.
See more folks, if he doesn't, you know, because what I'm predicting, and I think I'm going to be pretty close, is Windows 8 is going to be a big flop.
Windows 8, the technical term is Windows 8 is going to be a crap fest.
Right. And I think you're going to see some folks coming to the dark side and going over to Linux.
We should be holding, you know, in the Linux users group and a couple of others, we should be holding more beginners Linux things.
Yes, because of the ease of use. I mean, it's gotten to where you can just put it in and it runs. And it still looks and feels like the old Windows, which 90% of the folks out there still like and do that have been doing it for quite a while. They don't want their menus to go away and the way they do things, especially if they're not used to tablets.
Right, right, right. Well, and the problem is...
And businesses are still on XP because they didn't want to go to Vista.
Right. One, you know, businesses don't want to retrain people every 2 years. They just don't. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of time and effort wasted and money spent. And while they're doing all that, productivity is down. And they don't want productivity to be down. So they hesitate to upgrade. All right. We're going to take a break. And it's going to be a good one for me. I hope it will be for you. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour. The longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Compete on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. A U.S. appeals court, I actually mentioned this earlier, U.S. appeals court, overturned a pre-trial sales ban against Samsung Electronics Company Limited's Galaxy Nexus smartphone, the one I have on my hip at this moment, dealing a setback to Apple in its battle against Google's increasingly popular mobile software. Apple is waging war on several fronts against Google, whose Android software powers many of Samsung's devices. Google's Android software powers. The ruling on Thursday from the U.S. Court of Appeals of the Federal Circuit Court is not expected to have an outsized impact on the smartphone market, as the Nexus is, and it pains me to say this, an aging product in Samsung's lineup. Apple stock closed down nearly 2% that day. However, the court's reasoning could make it much harder for companies that sue over patents get computers' products pulled from the market. Such sales injunctions have been a key for companies trying to increase their leverage in courtroom patent fights. Apple did score a sweeping legal victory over Samsung in August, when a U.S. jury found Samsung had copied critical features of the hugely popular iPhone and iPad and awarded Apple $1.05 billion in damages. The Nexus phone was not included in that trial, but is part of a tandem case Apple filed against Samsung earlier this year. District Judge Lucy Koh issued a pretrial injunction against the Nexus in June, based on an Apple patent for unified search capability. The appeals court then stayed that injunction until it could formally rule. In its opinion on Thursday, the Federal Circuit reversed the injunction entirely, saying that Ko abused her discretion. Apple failed to prove that consumers purchased the Samsung product because of the infringing technology, the appeals court ruled. It may very well be that the accused product would sell almost as well without incorporating the patented feature, the court wrote. And in that case, even if the competitive injury that results from selling the accused device is substantial, the harm that flows from the alleged infringement, the only harm that should count, is not. The court considered a single patent, one which allows the smartphone to search multiple data storage locations at once. We used to call that searching. For example, yeah. The smartphone could search the device's memory as well as the internet with a single query. Do you think the court made the right decision? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
What size screen is on yours?
Four and a half, 5 inches. I don't even remember.
Okay.
I just start. A little less than five, I think.
Yeah, I'm starting to, you know, do my research because come February 1st, I can upgrade my phone. So I'm again, my biggest thing is I'm just trying to find something with really good battery.
Well, you can upgrade your phone anytime you want as long as you pay full price.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And are you on unlimited data?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to want to pay full price anyway.
No, I take that back. No, I don't have unlimited data.
Oh,
unlimited text, 700 minutes. I'm on AT&T.
Most of the carriers are trying to force you off of unlimited data. When you upgrade your phone, especially now that LTE is out and you're saying it's a new radio technology, so you have to get a new plan. You can't take your unlimited data with you.
Well, the thing of it is I do so much tapping into other networks. You know, if I'm around some other area that I can, you know, tap into their Wi-Fi, which you'd be surprised, folks. You know, you can not just have it just go off the phone and eat up your data plan. I'm just trying to be a little smarter, and I don't even make a dent in my, you know, I think. Was it 2 megabits? I forget what I'm entitled to. I never hit it, so
usually
I don't need
2 gig a month.
Yeah, and you know I don't even hit it because
I hit it. Oh, I go way over it all the time, Well, one of the things, of course, is that I have I can set up a hotspot.
Oh, okay.
So, for example, when we went to Chicago a couple of weeks ago for my daughter, my wife spent much of the night. I'm in Castleville on the train through my hotspot. And that is perfectly legal because the court slapped Verizon. Verizon had said, oh, no, you cannot do that without an extra data plan. And the court said, no. Mm. When we gave you the 4G spectrum, it had originally been public spectra.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things you signed, Verizon, was that you would let people use it as much as they wanted.
Right. They were
so
trying to double
shut
down.
Up. Right. They were trying to double down. And so it is perfectly legal for me to do that. So
cool.
That was kind of fun. All right. Our next caller is Joanne from Greece, New York. Welcome, Joanne. What's your question?
Wireless keyboards.
Sure.
I like my wireless keyboard. I've had it a couple years. But now it seems that I'm typing and I look up on the screen and there's nothing there. And some of the letters don't work. And should I buy a new one, or are they not really efficient?
Well, they're efficient. First, you might want to think about, have you changed the batteries recently?
Yeah.
Yes, I have, yep.
Then it just might be dead. Keyboards die.
I did change them.
The keyboard itself could die. The mechanical buttons on the keyboard can just wear out over time, too.
Okay. And I refresh. There's a little blue button on the back. I pushed that once.
Yeah, sometimes it can lose the pairing. So if you go into the Bluetooth setup, you can make sure the pairing is right. Sometimes we've even seen if you forget it and then repair it, that helps maintain the connection.
Right. But it is simply possible that that particular keyboard is dying.
Okay.
Have you had it for a couple of years?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. You know, they're cheap enough now.
Yeah.
But they're not really designed to last 5-10 years. Sorry.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Bye.
Yeah, we're seeing that more and more. Everybody wants everything cheap, but they want it to last 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't have both.
Right. It's one or the other.
That's exactly right. And it's too bad It's really too bad because, you know, you get used to something. Well, that's part of the problem. You get used to something. Mm-hmm. You know, the internet community, the Linux community went insane when Unity hit. Because, oh my God, it's a different graphical user interface. Well, now Windows people are having the same pain, except, of course, under Linux, you could go back to Chrome or to GNOME anytime you wanted to, except then they changed GNOME a little bit. But I mostly, well, here I'm still using an old version of GNOME, but I mostly use XFCE or XKDE as my desktop in those circumstances anyway. So it's more lightweight, it's faster, more responsive, very cool. But once you become used to a graphical user interface, you want to keep it. You know, once you become used to the way something works, Joanne loves her wireless keyboard for the freedom that it gives her.
Right. You don't have those cords and that. Right. Same with the wireless mice.
Right.
You're not always pulling on that cord because you move the mouse around to a different position.
Right.
A lot of folks are wanting that more and more, and they've become down, so, like you said, so reasonable. It's no biggie. Go out and pick up another good keyboard and mouse because they usually match them.
Yep, that's just me. Somebody's texting me.
All right, and that, you know, they you just replace the whole thing, and you still have the other thing. She should double check, make sure she didn't move the receiver too far away. I mean, usually they got good range on them.
Yeah, if you have a tower on the floor, maybe the thing fell down behind the tower.
And, you know, or it's pointed away from it, because usually there's a front facing on that, even though it emits a signal.
Some of
them
nowadays are just a thumb drive.
Yeah.
And that may be loose.
Could be. I mean, just check those things,
too. You should check those things, too. Joanne, I know you're still listening. So
why wouldn't you be?
Exactly. So check those things as well. But, yeah, we're seeing that also a lot now with tablets. People are buying wireless keyboards, mm-hmm. not wireless mice. Most tablets don't use mice at all, but they're buying wireless keyboards for those Bluetooth keyboards, Bluetooth headsets. I have a Bluetooth, headset for listening to music. It's a pair of cans,
mm-hmm.
but no cord. And, holy moly, I love it. I love it. I can keep my, tablet in my bag. And just put on the headphones and click the few buttons and start things up and listen to stuff. And it's very, very cool. It's very, very cool.
One thing I'd like to jump on before we go on, because we're going to be coming up on a break in a few minutes, but let our listeners know, starting Monday is the start of our pledge drive.
Absolutely.
So I'm just kind of putting a bug in their ear come next Saturday. It'd be really great if we could just get the phones ringing off the hook. So we can beat the polka guys. So that's why I say I'm trying to do a little warning to folks because we got some great stuff coming up with this new membership card that when you become a $90 or more member, you get this card and you get great deals at a number of restaurants, like 2-for-1.
Yep.
But we definitely got to get an early jump on the polka guys right from the get-go. So just...
Well, as all our listeners know, this is a member-supported radio station, and it is the money of the members. We don't get federal money or state money or county money or local money. It all comes from members, and it's only $50,000. That's all we need to raise.
Yeah.
That's what every pledge drive is. So, our Soundbites listeners, each one of them independently wealthy.
Yep.
So if every one of our listeners just
money, we're saving them.
Exactly right. If every one of our listeners just sent in a pledge, this drive would be over in a week.
It would be. That's why I'm just trying to preempt. Normally we just we're into the fun drive, trying to get folks ready this week.
Prep everybody.
Yeah,
they have an entire week to think about how much this show is worth.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, you can go online and look at the great gifts in it that you can pick.
Great gifts.
The attire, you know. In fact, I've got the pullover.
Jazz 90.1 fleece pullover. Nice.
Pullover. Very
nice.
It's very warm. They got the zip.
Very stylish, even on you. So
thank you. I know it. It's amazing.
Clearly, it makes you handsomer, and your teeth are whiter, and you're more attractive to whichever sex you prefer.
There you go. But if we can really kick butt, that would be so great.
Wouldn't it be great?
Because, you know, we always come so close.
Yeah.
It'd be nice. Right out of the gate. Yeah, I have the phones ringing because Samantha said she'll come in. And
Shirley's coming in for
Shirley's coming in. I mean, it'd be great to have those individuals here helping us, just running their butts off, bringing us in pledges and keeping you busy.
Exactly.
Just saying, oh, we got this one and this one and this. It'd be really great.
We would love that. That would be great. You know, we have people call in for weeks on end, and the pledge drive certainly does last as long as it takes us to raise the money. So we can be done with the pledge drive in a week.
Oh, that would be so sweet.
Wouldn't that be great?
Oh, just kick it down.
Just get
fast.
It out of the way. Just
yeah.
Get it out of the way.
And then we can start getting into what we enjoy is, you know, with the because it is into October. We're coming up in November, and you're going to have your Black Friday stuff and all the stuff that's coming out along with Windows 8, doing the reviews on all the stuff and what you're going to want for that Christmas.
And we'll have a show where you can call up and give us your wish list. Wish list. Easy for you to say. Apparently not for me. Your wish list.
Mr. Teeth and Mr. Tongue. No, what is it? Mr. Lips and Mr. Tongue. Deform worms.
Deform
worm. I can't do it either. See, it's the weight of the mustache that messes up the way your lip moves.
Well, that's actually true. Folks who are lip readers have a more difficult time reading people's lips when they have a mustache and a beard.
I got a friend that where I'm working has a hard time doing it.
Right, and part of it, of course, is simply that it covers your lips for some people. But the other thing is that it actually stiffens your upper lip. Keep a stiff upper lip. Oh. And it makes it a little harder to speak.
Yeah.
And, of course, we don't spend nearly the time we should doing our vocal exercises for the day.
Me, 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 me.
And toy boat, toy boat, toy boat, toy boat, toy boat.
The sixth sick sheik's sixth sheep's sick.
What to do to die today at a minute or two to two? A thing distinctly hard to say, but harder still to do. We'll beat a tattoo at 20 to 2, a rat a tat a tat a to 2, when the dragon will come at the beat of the drum at a minute or two to two today at a minute or two to two. Thank you. Thank you very much. Rubber baby buggy bumpers, rubber baby buggy bumpers, rubber baby buggy bumpers, rubber baby buggy bumpers.
You'll be here all week to try the veal?
Yeah. Those are all the vocal exercises we used to do before we went on stage, and they loosen up your lips and your tongue. She sells seashells down by the seashore. We didn't do that one.
Yep. I haven't checked recently. According to Guinness, the world's hardest tongue twister in English is the sixth sick sheik's sixth sheep's sick. But there is one in an African dialect that every other syllable is a click.
Yeah.
And it roughly translates to the skunk rolled down the hill and ruptured its larynx.
Wow.
That's the rough
English.
How do you
find this
stuff? Well, it loses something in translation.
Yeah. I collect weird trivia.
Yeah, apparently you do, yes.
Weird and useless trivia.
Yes, you do. All right, thank heaven that music tells us we're at the end of this particular hour. Despair not, for we have another one coming right up after this one. But right now, we're going to take a fairly long break while we soothe Steve's fevered brow. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. Still plenty of time to join in the fun. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free 1-800-790-0415. That's 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Computer Show. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, it's the second hour of Soundbites for Saturday, the 13th of October, Anno Domini 2012. And you can join in the fun simply by calling 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. This was one of my favorite stories of the week. An enterprising McDonald's in Virginia Beach, Virginia, decided that suitable incentive for its customers is to offer them mounted iPads to peruse while they chew. We have it on very good authority that many Apple fan persons eat at McDonald's simply because they serve Big Macs. These people will do anything to extend their Mac affiliation. Perhaps, therefore, it's for them that a McDonald's in Virginia Beach, Virginia, has struck upon a novel idea to induce loyalty from its customers. It has placed iPads in its restaurant for their use. Yes, entirely for free. The iPads are mounted on tables so you can surf while you chew. Some might surely worry that the screen might get terribly greasy as McDonald's food does have a certain, well, fluid content. However, the franchise owner, Hugh Fard, seems delighted with the idea. I originally thought this was like an onion thing.
Especially with a name like that.
Right. He first noticed the concept at a worldwide McDonald's convention in Florida. So he leased the iPads from a French company, which looks after them and even replaces them should some full-bellied miscreant decides he needs to perform a takeaway. Oddly, though, Fard chose to block YouTube as for some reason he believes that some of its content is pornographic. However, one wonders how much other blocking he might have done. Some porn sites do have rather innocent-sounding domain names, and in general, pretty much any random sequence of characters you type in to a web browser will end up at a porn site. It's odd, too, that McDonald's would want customers to stay longer. Once upon a time, the whole concept of fast food was to get the customer in and get them out again. It was all about turnover. Yeah, like Google used to think the same thing. Starbucks has certainly had its fill of laptop loungers in some of its New York establishments. The McDonald's customers, though, seem to love their iPads, which complement the chain's move toward a more stylish environment. So, our question to you, would you go to McDonald's to use the iPads? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free 1-800-790-0415, just like Bill did from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Hi, Nick. How you doing?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm good.
That was your question, Bill.
I have a question about Avast security.
Yeah.
I had bought an account, and I used the sandbox feature, and I also used their safe zone feature, which is similar to a sandbox, but it gives you supposedly immune from any kind of key loggers or anything like that during your banking and so on.
Right.
I wanted to get your opinion on that. Is it truly as good as they say it is? Because I've been using it for almost a year now, and I'll be coming up for renewal pretty soon. And I wanted to get your opinion on whether you think that's really a good feature to have for a Windows machine.
It is pretty doggone good. Nothing is as good as anybody says it is.
Okay.
But it is pretty good. In general, like I said earlier, if you got to make sure you're at HTTPS in a secure login anytime you go to any place where you're going to put in your personal information. But beyond that, having something like AVG that sandboxes some stuff is actually a pretty good choice. So yeah, I like it. I think it's a very good choice.
For a Windows machine.
For a Windows machine.
Yeah. The reason I brought that up is also I've been doing a little experimenting in the Linux world.
Yeah.
And I was using VirtualBox.
Yes.
And I was wondering, is that very similar to what Avast has given you?
Well, in some ways it is. VirtualBox actually lets you run an operating system within an operating system. You want to have a decent amount of RAM and a pretty beefy processor or set of processors. But when you do that, you can run an entire operating system in its own little sandbox. So I do that both at work and at home. I run Windows in a sandbox on my Linux box. That way I can do any sort of virus testing or whatever that I want. The first thing I do is I install the operating system, install all the stuff that I'm going to be using, make sure it's clean, and then take a snapshot. And then I set that snapshot aside. So whenever I'm working on viruses or whatever, the minute I'm done, I replace the session that I was working in with a fresh copy of the snapshot. So it's done, it's working, it's ready to go, and I know there are no viruses in it. And the version that had the viruses is just a file on my drive that I delete.
And the neat thing about VirtualBox is they make Windows, Linux, and Mac versions of it.
Right.
So you can run VirtualBox on any OS to run any other OS you want.
Right.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Well, you can't. Well, now you can because Mac OS is an Intel based product. But even so, it's still using stuff out of the. You still can't run a Mac OS, right? I mean, it's got stuff that it runs out of the.
It's tricky to run a Mac OS on a non Apple computer, right. But it's doable.
Yeah, good to know.
I would probably want to do the either Windows in Linux or Linux in Windows, one or the other. I don't think I would mess with the Mac at this point.
Right. Well, there's a everybody in the IRC chat will tell me what this is. There's a program you can run that's just a single file on Windows that you double click and suddenly you're in Windows. You're in Linux, and I can't think of the name. Lin for Win, maybe. The one time
Windows.
The IRC chat. Wooby, thank you. Chris Reich had it. Wooby, WUBI, and you can download that. And Wooby will actually run a version of Linux in its own little sandbox in Windows. You don't even have to run VirtualBox.
Oh, pretty neat.
I prefer to go the other way because I just prefer that, but, you know, it's just six of one, half dozen of the other.
I'm starting to really like Linux as I start. I looked at two different versions. I looked at a Mint. I was running Mate.
Yep.
And then I also like the Ubuntu.
Yeah, Ubuntu is very nice. Linux Mint is very nice. Mint is more old school Linux before... is essentially Ubuntu before they went into things like Unity. Cinnamon under Linux Mint is really the oldest version of Windows. And Archandra is right in the IRC chat. Wooby doesn't actually run inside Windows. It kind of sets Windows aside, uses the same file system for storage, but actually then runs, and then you quit out of it to do the other. So it's really not quite like VirtualBox, which is really... essentially running Linux in a window.
Mm-hmm.
So you could alt-tab to something else.
Beautiful.
Right.
I've been experimenting with that, and I wanted to give you guys a call, especially you, because
thanks.
I know you're the Linux guy and that you know everything about it, and I wanted to get your thoughts on whether that's as a secure way of doing your banking and stuff like that as using an Avast safe zone type thing in the future.
Yeah, that's pretty safe. Again, if it's on your own machine, obviously, then it's pretty safe too. And even if other people in your house have access to that machine, of course, you don't want to give them admin rights. But even if they have admin rights, if you're running in a sandbox, there isn't anything for them to find.
There's even been some talk of the extreme paranoid to use a window or a Linux boot CD.
Thumb drive.
Well, thumb drives are writable. If you use a boot CD, then you boot into Linux, do all your banking. It cannot save cookies. It cannot save cash because the CD is not writable.
Right.
So if you can find a thumb drive with a lock switch on it.
They used to all do that, yeah. And now very few of them do.
Yep.
But isn't that extremely slow to run off of a CD?
No.
Yes.
Yes. Very slow to run off a CD. Well, very slow to load stuff. I mean, it runs at the same speed, but loading and saving, we can't save, but loading is very slow. If you do it off a thumb drive, it's a little slow. Again, just the loading and saving part, but not the running part.
Yeah, because the machine that I'm using, I got the 8 gigs of RAM. I've got a nice video card, and, you know, it runs pretty quick, and you want to run from the hard drive because if you run it on the DVD, it reduces it down to, like, the old days.
Yep. It takes time to load stuff, absolutely.
In fact, I've been considering going to a solid state, but that's like, you know, the machine's a little older, and I didn't know if I would create more problems because it's not that slow now. I mean, it clicks right along. So.
Yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
And you're moving your bottleneck. Yeah, now your hard drive is going to be really, really fast, but what about your SATA controller and your video card?
Right. So,
exactly.
Yeah, don't
right.
worry about it now. When you buy a new machine, maybe, then you worry about it, but otherwise, no.
Absolutely, and I'll be probably... talking to Dave when it comes to that time because he could have saved me some money on the this machine that I had put together myself if I would have looked at his tip there because right now my motherboard is I can't go to a quad core I'm at a dual core and
yeah.
In order to to my bottleneck now is the processor. So in other words, with all the RAM and the video card and everything, that's all cool and dandy, but
you still only have two cores.
Right. If I want to go to a quad or six cores, then I have to upgrade the motherboard, and then my version of Ultimate that I have, 7 Ultimate's no good anymore because it's set for one motherboard.
Well, and that's one of the reasons that I love Linux. I actually won, believe it or not, an 8-core processor and motherboard. And so I put together a Linux box, and it doesn't care. 2 cores, 8 cores, 50 cores, happily loads and runs, doesn't care.
And I will be updating that list by next month for the upcoming holiday season.
Just so folks, if I would have saw that first, I would have got a better motherboard.
Yep.
Because then I would have been able to do the, you know, change the processor and my version of Windows and everything, it'd be no problem.
Now, with that, remember that statement you just said and remember us next week.
Yep, definitely.
Thank you.
I was listening to you guys earlier. You guys definitely have saved me some money, and you're a great value.
Thank you. That's what we like to hear. Remember that next week.
Absolutely, Nick.
Thanks.
Well, you guys answered my questions. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you, Bill.
Bye-bye.
We actually had a question come in on the IRC chat. Rich wants to know, how do I run a 32-bit program on a 32-bit game on a 64-bit computer? And in fact, you shouldn't have a problem, actually.
It depends. Games are especially tough because they like to bypass APIs and write directly to hardware. So it may be trying to access a direct 32-bit CPU command or a video card command that makes it not work right in that 64-bit OS.
Right.
Games are especially tricky. A lot of times, games would have their own boot disk where you would boot to that. It's usually just a free DOS on a disk, so you get a very low OS for the game to run on top of. Typically, we see that problem with older games, and the easiest solution is to keep an older computer lying around for
it. Sometimes, if you're running, for example, Windows 7, you can right click and go into properties and set it to run as to essentially tell the game it is a 32-bit version of Windows and it's XP or whatever it is, and that might help. But there are simply some programs, including a number of older games, that just simply will not run in a 64-bit environment. Done. I mean, that's...
Yeah, they freeze it up.
Yep. I'm sorry, but there are just simply some that will not run. All right, our next caller is Joan from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Joan, what's up?
Hi, and I just wanted to say also I'm an alumni with Nick from way back in 1970s.
Wow.
Yeah, when he was in the theater department.
Oh, there you go.
The music department.
Hiya, Joan.
I just have a real problem here. Ever since September 9th, I've been getting, and then it did stop after a while, and then I also deleted one of the two, and they stayed deleted. I've been getting duplicates of everything. Is that a virus?
Duplicates of what?
My mail, my email, when it comes in.
What is your email program?
I don't know. I have a Mac all-in-one. And
you click on the little blue postage stamp to get your mail?
Yeah.
That's the Apple Mail program.
Okay, thank you.
Named it Mail for obscurity, right?
Yeah, right.
I don't know all the technical.
Well, no, that's fine, Joan. You don't need to. That's why we're here. So she gets double in her mail.
But I'm not anymore. And I took some of it and deleted, I was over 500.
Wow.
And I deleted, you know, like about half of them, and they stayed so that there was only one. But I didn't go all the way back, and it originally started on September 9th.
Sometimes what we see that happening is when your computer checks mail, it asks the mail server, whoever your mail server is, to give me the mail. And say you have 50 messages. It downloads those 50 messages, and then your computer says, okay, I got them. And then the mail server says, okay. If, for example, your computer stopped at 49, then the mail server didn't know you got them all. So the next time it checked, it said, oh, you need these 49 messages because you didn't say you got them last time.
What do I do?
is very little you can do yourself. It's a hiccup in the mail server quite often that your computer didn't tell the mail server that it got everything because the mail server might have been overloaded at the moment or something happened.
Is there anything that has to do with the timer if the browser is slow? I know maybe I don't think the two are connected.
Well, as Steve said, it's more likely at the server end.
Okay.
You can always tell, you know who your internet service provider is usually by where your mail is. So if you get your mail at for example, rochester.rr.com, then your email provider is Time Warner.
Mine's Frontier.
Then you're right. So you know it's Frontier. So you could always call the Frontier hotline. And not now, of course, because it stopped, right? But if it starts up again, give them a call and say, I'm starting to get duplicates of the mail.
Okay.
Okie doke?
All right. That helps me a lot, and I really appreciate your program. And I wish I were more techy, but I'm working on it.
Keep listening.
I'm going to the meetings, and I have I got my computer at the recycling over there behind the old post office.
Excellent. Well, Joan, we got to go. We got to take a break.
Thank you.
Thank you. Back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. You know, my friend Pete reminded me that it's been a while since we've talked about the Rock Wiki at rockwiki.org. Lots of great information about Rochester. Very cool place. Lots of nifty people. You can even become a part of it and add and edit things yourself because it's a regular wiki. It's very cool. It's all about Rochester. You should check it out. The other thing that I wanted to mention was a site called AV Comparatives, av-comparatives.org. And it's independent testing of antivirus software. And they have a monthly test of antivirus software. They also have a Mac security review for this month. They're very up to date. And there's a lot of neat stuff there. The latest test, I think, is from September. I think the latest test is from September. And it's an independent group, and they test a bunch of different antivirus products and tell you out of the, you know, however many thousands of viruses they check, how many they blocked, how many required some sort of user interaction in order to block them, and how many actually would have compromised the system. And I was surprised to see that as of September, and they fluctuate every month. I mean, if you take a look every month, the charts are a little different. But this month for September. For September, they don't do anything for December, January, or February, and they don't do anything in July. But the rest of the time, it's a monthly thing. And as for September, ESET, F-Secure, CII, which I don't even know what that is, and Trend Micro hit 100%, 100% blocked. Which was pretty doggone nice. AVG and Avast were both up there, but they also had a number of them. They hit about 98% blocked, and they had a bunch, another 4 or 5% that required some sort of user interaction to block. So that's pretty cool. I was kind of surprised. There's some a bunch I've never ever heard of, most of them are pretty good. A couple of the ones that you would expect. I'm sorry, not CII. GData was 100%. CII was not. They were only about 95%. Bitdefender was like at 99%. So there's some pretty interesting statistics here. I was shocked at some of the things. PC Tools didn't do a great job. McAfee did a, I think, horrible job. So
well,
you,
we've
you
always
should...
said that the big AV companies tend to not do well because the right. virus writers don't release it until it can get past the big three, McAfee, Symantec, and...
Norton.
Yeah.
No, Symantec is Norton.
Norton.
So, yeah, I was kind of surprised. Avast and AVG, which are both free, did a really nice job. They did have... They did about 99, 98%, I suppose, here, and another 4 or 5% that you had to have some sort of human interaction, you know, where it said, is this a virus
or not? Well, it's always going to be a game of leapfrog.
Right, I mean, right. And that's why the chart changes every month.
Right.
But if you want to take a look, that's where it is, av-comparatives.org. And Steve's already, I'm sure, put the link.
Avast, though. Well, we use both. I use Avast on my machine upstairs, downstairs. We're using both AVG and Norton, you know, just to keep them all tested and working on them. And they all seem to do very well, especially Norton. I've been very impressed with them. They finally, you know, took a few slaps up the head to realize, oh, versions 5, 6, and 7, and needed to redo something, and they did, and they revamped it from the ground up, and now I can say, you know, Norton's a very good product. I'm very pleased with it. It doesn't eat up a lot of the resources like the old code did in its day.
Right.
And they even went to the point that they want to make sure that you know this, and they've got a meter there showing you that their software can't be blamed anymore for being the hog that it used to be.
Right. So. And for you Mac people, there is a Mac security review here. How to do that and some of the antivirus products that are available for it. Again, Avast hit 100% on the Mac and the rest of them pretty good. So, but you got to be aware that in order for them to have hit 100%, well, there must have been a bunch of viruses that they tested them against. So there are Mac viruses.
Could have been one virus, and it found it. That's 100%.
There, yes. Even so, if there's one virus, there's a virus.
Yep.
There were 477 of them, actually. 477 viruses for the Mac. Let us never forget that the first PC virus was on a Mac. It was on an Apple machine, anyway. And so, you know, pay attention to that. Run an antivirus program. No machine is safe. You Linux people, same thing. Most Linux people know enough to run one, but you have to, and you got to remember.
Yeah, you got, because it's an ongoing battle.
That's exactly right.
You know, I mean, just you can't get complacent and just say, oh yeah, I'll do it tomorrow. That's just in that short span. Heck, within a minute, you can get infected if you're not keeping up with it.
Right.
So it's like the old Pram oil filter. You want to pay me now? Pay me later. I don't care.
Right. And the doctor in the IRC chat is asking, where did Microsoft come in? I didn't see them on the list, actually. I don't think they did that one on the list. I don't know. But there were some pretty neat ones, and it's not just tests for kicking out viruses, but also detecting files that viruses have put in. There's a section on performance tests. Is your security software slowing down your device? And there are results for that as well. So it's a pretty interesting little site, and I would suggest you take a little time to check it out because it's kind of fun. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Greece, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Hi, Nick. Earlier you mentioned using your Samsung Galaxy as a hotspot. You were going to Chicago,
yeah,
and your carrier was Verizon, and they were talking about having to set up a separate data plan, which you indicated, you know, was against the agreement that they had. Now, every time I tried to do that on my Verizon Motorola Droid Razor, I keep using their app, and it keeps coming up with data plans and things of that nature.
Yep, they're allowed to do that with their app. I don't use their app. I use a program called Foxfi, F-O-X-F-I.
Foxfi.
Which is an Android app, right?
It's an Android app. Are you on an Android?
Yes.
You said Samsung. You said, yeah. So, yeah, I use a program called Foxfi, which is exceptional. You just once you've set it up, right? I mean, you gotta tell it what the password is going to be. But once you set it up, you just make sure you turn on Wi-Fi and then tap the button.
You're
actually,
right.
The new version will turn it on itself if it isn't on.
Okay.
And if it wasn't on, it'll turn it back off again. So you just hit the button, and it turns on four hotspots, so four people could connect. And if they have the password, they're in.
They're in.
Okay, was that Foxfi with an F?
Yes, Foxfi. I'm checking to make sure.
Okay, Steve will put up a link.
Foxfi.
And you don't have to root your phone.
Well, that's why I use it. It is. You do not have to root to use it.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah. What was weird for me was, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, you should explain what the by your term root.
Oh, yeah. Here's the deal with phones. There are a lot of things that you can do with a phone directly, but some things are blocked either by the operating system itself. That is not true of Android phones, by the way. It is very true of Apple iOS phones. And sometimes by the carrier. So you can't do certain things unless you root the phone, which means that you take it away from the stock version of the operating system and run your own version, essentially. I realize that everybody in the IRC chat is going to say, that's not exactly how it works. I know. Never mind. Half a dozen people now have just stopped typing. Going,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
But
pounding on keyboards.
Right. But Foxfire does not require you to have rooted your phone. So you can have a standard stock, just bought it, just took it out of the box, running it phone, and Foxfi will work. What was really weird for me was several times during the trip up and back, people would stop. They would see my wife farming or whatever they call it in castling, and say, oh, is there Wi-Fi in this train? And my wife would always say, no, I'm using my husband's hotspot. Invariably, and this literally happened five different times through the trip, the women would go, aww. And the men would go, I don't know what that means.
I'm just
the observer in this.
You're one of those guys that sends flowers to his wife for no reason, aren't you?
I absolutely do. I absolutely do.
As I used to.
I do all the time because you never know when you're going to have to send them.
Right. When I do that, she assumes there's a reason.
You're in trouble.
No,
what'd you do now?
I just regularly send her flowers for the hell of it. And I always send them at work so that everybody else sees them. That's the whole point.
Yep.
You know,
except she works at home now, right?
Well, no, that's a problem. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Larry. What's your question?
Good afternoon, everyone. I just upgraded to a iPhone 4S after many years of an older model. I like the seamlessness with my iMac. Question I have is I've downloaded some extra apps to the phone, and some of them, when you open them the first time or initially, ask you for your location. Is it okay to be able to find you or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
And some people have said, no, don't do that. I guess my question is there some kind of downside to this?
Well, they'll know where you are.
Well, there's two downsides. Oh, wow. One,
and I'll take it offline. Thank you.
That's okay.
Oh, you can stay online.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's sort of two downsides. A regular reputable program. I can't even think of an example.
Google Maps.
Google Maps. Right. It needs to know where you are so it can give you a map.
Okay.
An irreputable
Foursquare.
Like Foursquare, where you check in for something.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It has to know where you are so it can check you in.
Okay.
The danger there is stalkers, basically. People know where you are because you're posting where you are to the internet. And there have been cases of unscrupulous apps that will use your location and use your contact information for either advertising or other purposes. We've sort of joked over the years that your cell phone knows where you are anyway, because it has to know to ring when someone dials you.
Right.
Okay. So you could be walking past Joe's Diner, and your phone rings, and there's an ad for Joe's Diner, because it knows you're there.
Yep.
The cell phone companies have avoided doing that for the privacy and the creepy factor of that.
Well, more importantly, because if I'm paying for my minutes...
Right. You don't want to have to pay for someone else's advertising. Yeah.
When somebody calls me.
But this whole new internet we're in now of social contact, you know, random social contact with Facebook and Foursquare and Twitter, that everyone knows where you are all the time, all of these apps can do it, but the operating system is making them ask for that ability so that you know it's doing that if it wants it.
Oh, so it's doing it whether you say yes or not?
Well, if you say don't allow, then it won't do it, and okay. And you know, a program like Foursquare won't be able to work because it doesn't know where you are.
Right, but a lot of programs, for example, when you upload photos, they can contain location information.
Yeah, where the GPS coordinates of where you were when that photo was taken.
If you look carefully, you can often see on Facebook posts from Rochester, New York, or from Brighton, New York.
Yeah.
And so you can if you post from your mobile app, it can also post where you are, but it should ask for that permission first.
Okay.
And that's one of the things Apple has done in iOS 6. It's kind of a catch-22. More programs have to ask for more things.
Okay.
So it's going to ask to look at your contacts. It's going to ask to get your location. It's going to ask to do things, which is good from a privacy standpoint, but it's bad because people get annoyed that their phone is asking them all this stuff.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of this catch-22 that has been arguments both ways, you know, that I downloaded in fact, that was one of the fake programs that got caught. Uh-huh. It was a program called Find and Call. And what it did is it found everyone in your address book and started calling them with ads.
Oh.
But it didn't actually say it was going to do that.
Okay.
It said it was going to find people you knew. It did, and then sent them ads. So that became one of the points that started this controversy about making programs ask for what it wants to do with your private data.
Okay. So in general, then, it's probably safe to say allow.
In general, if the program is reputable and the company you know, so for example, when Apple asks, you can say yes.
Okay.
But we got to take a break.
All right.
Thanks.
Well, thank you for your answer, though.
Yep. Back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites on Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, really, I am sorry, because the best show happens during the breaks. Unfortunately, most of that stuff we can't repeat. Our next caller is George from Greece, New York. Welcome, George. What's your question?
I need help taking the next step on my journey to understand the speed with which my computer works through the internet.
We're here to help you, George.
In the past, I've called in and I've begun to use the Windows Task Manager.
Uh-huh.
I'm working with XP Home. And I was commenting I only had 2 applications open and it still seemed to be very slow. And one of you was mentioning that I need to look at the Processes tab to see what else is open.
Right.
So I've begun to look there, and I see numerous programs that are open, consuming memory usage, but it never seems to clear out.
Right. Those are all internal processes that Windows uses itself that are all running under the hood. When you run Windows, there are actually hundreds of processes that run in the background.
So
that's true of every operating system.
1.3, 1.4 gigabytes.
Mm-hmm.
When when I turn the computer on and do work up from a cold start, it quite often sits at about half that amount.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is this slowing me down as I'm trying to work through the internet, or is it doesn't
no,
really
the,
matter?
No, the internet is an entirely separate issue. Okay, so for example, there's actually two parts to the internet. There's the part with how fast your screen draws, and part of that is your machine, but the rest is entirely the internet. And the other part is how fast data come from the internet, and you have no control over that really. So here's the deal. If I go to a website that's very close to me, okay, let me do it this way. I'm at work. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I go to my homepage for the Saunders College, saunders.rit.edu.
Okay.
It's on a gigabit connection, and I'm on a gigabit connection, and we're two hops away from each other.
Okay.
Through gigabit switches. So when I ask for that page, there's a giant sucking sound, and the page comes up.
And a big puff. There's a little puff of smoke.
Puff of smoke, and there it is. It just magically appears. If I'm home, it takes longer. My machine at home is, in fact, identical to my machine at work. And obviously, the server is the same. So what's the difference? The connectivity between the two. It takes longer to load the page at home because of all the different machines and connections through which the data have to travel to get to my machine at home. I have no control over that. There is nothing I can do to change that. I can make my machine as fast as possible, and like I said, my machine at home and my machine at work are identical. Sometimes I have a laptop at work that I take home, and I know it's identical, and it's still slower at home. And again, it has nothing to do with the machine I have and everything to do with the connectivity to the server on the internet.
So once the data gets to your computer, your computer then has to interpret the data, and a lot of that's the processor. And then your computer displays the data, and a lot of that's the video card. And if there are too many other processes running, or if there's not enough free memory available, those things can be slower on your computer.
And one of the key things that I would mention, because some of the other folks I know inevitably will be going in there and looking at stuff and starting shutting down stuff.
You don't.
Some stuff has to run.
If you don't know what you're doing, keep your fingers out of it.
Please.
But in general, George, how much RAM do you have?
1.5 gig.
And you're running what?
What OS?
XP.
Okay, that's about the best you're going to do. You could do better by running Windows 7 with 4 gigs,
or 8 gigs
of RAM. That would speed some things up.
Better machine.
But my machine won't take any more RAM.
Right, well, but my
and
point is...
And XP won't handle much more RAM anyway.
I understand that. But here, let me back up just a second. I was following your explanation quite well, except that I couldn't quite sort out when you talked about the same machine and the speed of it, whether you're talking about the processor speed or the availability of RAM.
All of it.
You could have the same physical machine, but not necessarily have the same amount of RAM available.
No, I'm saying they're exactly identical in all specifications.
Okay.
And in fact, I have a laptop that belongs to me at work. I mean, it belongs to work, but I have it at work. And I have taken that laptop home, and my internet experience is slower at home.
But are you implying that you've got the same programs open?
Everything is exactly the same.
The amount of RAM still available or accessible is the same.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I have tried it with no other programs open. Cold boot, first thing I do is open Chrome and go to the internet. And it is slower at home than it is at work.
Let me take the example just a little closer to what I'm trying to do. I'm going into Yahoo, and I'm accessing financial information.
Mm-hmm.
It's information that's updated daily.
Right.
Not terribly complex. But I go in, and it seems like many times I have to sit and wait and wait and wait for the response to come back.
Yahoo is a notoriously slow website because it does so much. It's so media rich, and there's so many videos on it, flash video, all of this stuff that we come to expect on the internet today that is just more than your machine is capable of handling because it's an older machine. You know, 10 years ago, XP with a gig of RAM was a really, really fast computer.
But, Steve, you hit the key point. You said, and incidentally, sometimes it's very responsive, and other times it's very slow. But I'm still going to what I know to be the same page at Yahoo to get the information.
Yes, but the machine behind Yahoo may be doing more at that moment or less at that. There's a billion people on Yahoo at any given second.
Yes.
And some of them are doing highly intensive things, and some of them are not. And so you can never, ever judge.
Yeah, and one of your neighbors might have just started watching a Netflix, and they're using some of the internet pipe.
Right. Listen, George, we can discuss this all day, but the simple answer is you can't change it, and I got another call to get.
Thank you.
Sorry, thanks. I wish it were possible to do that, but the reality is 99% of the time the problem on any internet connection is at the other end. I've gone places that are very fast at one moment and very slow at the next moment, and it's entirely due to the other end, and there's nothing you can do to change it.
Yeah, we started noticing when school started again that, you know, at like 3-4 o'clock, internet gets slow because all the kids just got home from school and jumped on, you know, the Xbox and internet gaming. So there's almost nothing you can do about that because internet is demand based. You know, if suddenly more people are trying to use the internet, you get a little bit slower at your end.
Right.
There's been some interesting work on buffer coddling.
Our next caller is Sam from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Sam. What's your question?
I've got a question about a Wi-Fi conflict at home. I've got a desktop computer hooked up to a wired router, and a while back I bought a Kindle Fire and a wireless access point, and I hooked it up to one of the ports on the router, and that worked fine until I got a Motorola Razr Droid. And it seems like if I have the Kindle off but the phone on Wi-Fi, things work fine until I shut off the Wi-Fi on the phone and go back to the Kindle, and the Kindle will not see the Wi-Fi. It just won't work. And I believe, if I've repeated this pattern correctly, if I completely shut down my DSL modem and the router and the wireless access point for a few minutes, start it all up again, and then just choose my device, whether the Kindle or the phone, then that device will pick up the Wi-Fi.
All right, a couple of things. There are two different ways you can hook up an access point. Mm-hmm. One is directly to the internet, and the other is to your router.
Mm-hmm.
If you've hooked it up directly to the internet, then it only has one IP address. And in fact, your router may only give you one IP address or two IP addresses. One is being taken up by the desktop, and the other one is being taken up by the access point.
Correct. Okay.
So what you really want to do is hook up the access point inside your own router, which gives you 65,000. 256.
Yeah.
IP addresses. And so you could have as many as you wanted and hook. That's the way I do it. I've got a dozen freaking devices hooked up. But unless you do it that way, you probably only have one or two addresses. And once it's been taken, it takes a while for. When you get an IP address from wireless, even wired, you lease it. They call it leasing it. And it lasts a certain amount of time. And then if that device is no longer on it, the lease is given back and can be used by another device. But during the time of the lease, you cannot disconnect one device and disconnect a second device without dropping that lease in between. And one way to drop that lease, turn everything off and turn it back on again.
Gotcha. Okay. So that might explain why I used to have a wired laptop going directly into the other port of that router.
Right.
And they would swap the same pair of IP addresses depending on which machine I started first, the desktop or the laptop.
Yep.
Yeah, you need to check your router and make sure you turn on something called NAT, Network Address Translation.
Okay.
And that allows that router to share a single internet address from your internet provider with multiple computers on your network.
Okay, and is that per port, or is that going to cover both ports?
That covers both ports. Essentially, you're creating your own internal network with thousands of addresses, and the router takes care of sending them all out through the modem to whatever. So you hook up your router to the modem, and then everything else you hook up to your router.
Right, and that's what I have right now. I'm just wondering.
But if you don't have NAT on,
literally shut the phone completely off.
Right. So if you don't have NAT on, that won't work. So make sure that network address translation is on.
Okay.
And we're done. We got to go.
See you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I want to thank everyone who called in. I want to apologize to all those of you to whom we did not get. Next week, call earlier and more often. George is coming in to do the best German music you'll hear all week. We'll see you next week in the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.